The 100 Years' War, the interim period after the Battle of Poitiers to the Du Guesclin period, Charles of Navarre negotiates with the Dauphin. Now, the King of Navarre didn't take long to perceive that his cause was lost. Few of the Parisians had much military experience. Charles himself had no more than 800 professional soldiers, including some 200 to 300 English archers. They were plainly not enough to confront the Dauphin's army in a pitched battle. Yet without being admitted into the city, they couldn't fight from the walls and the gates either. The obvious course was to negotiate with the Dauphin while there was still something to bargain with. But the problem for Charles was the Parisians. They still entertained an altogether unrealistic view of their chances. Moreover, their leaders had no appetite for compromise, since they were almost certain to be executed if the Dauphin ever laid hands on them. At an early stage, discreet contact was made between Charles of Navarre and the Dauphin. The Dowager Queen Jeanne acted as broker, as she had done in all previous dealings between the two enemies. She was assisted by a commission of mediators who had been appointed for the purpose by the Pope, the Bishop of Paris, the prior of Saint Martin de Champs, and the Archbishop of Lyon. At least two of these men had known sympathies for the House of Navarre. On July the 8th, 1358, when the siege had been in progress for about 10 days, the Dauphin and the King of Navarre met in a tense conference. It was held in a pavilion erected on an open ground area outside Port Saint Antoine. The Dauphin made his proposal. He was willing to buy Charles off with landed domains worth 10,000 livres a year and a cash sum of 400,000 écus payable in installments. It was less than what he had been demanding during the winter, but it was still a substantial offer. As for the Parisians, they were required to pay, by way of indemnity, the whole of the first installment of the ransom of John II. In return, the Dauphin would remit all criminal penalties for many acts of rebellion. According to those in the Dauphin's camp, Charles agreed to be bound by these terms for his own part and to do his best to obtain the agreement of the Parisians. But Charles was uncharacteristically hesitant throughout the negotiations and evidently uncertain where his best interest lay. At the last moment, he got cold feet about abandoning the Parisians before they had an opportunity to consider the terms for themselves. What guarantee would he have without their support that the Dauphin's promise would ever be observed? The two men were invited to swear on the body of Christ to observe the agreement. But as the Bishop of Lisieux tendered the divided communion host, which would have completed their oath, Charles suddenly excused himself. He had not fasted, he said, and it was necessary for him to return to Saint Denis. When the leaders of the Parisians were told the terms, they, of course, rejected them out of hand. They were suspicious now of Charles himself, because, of course, he's a nobleman. They were suspicious of the Dauphin, who reported to have sworn to see them dragged on hurdles to their deaths. And they were suspicious of the proposed treaty itself, which manifestly served Charles's interests better than their own, and might actually contain further undisclosed clauses. They declared that if necessary, they would fight the Dauphin's army on their own. So the agreement was abandoned. The King of Navarre promised to fight on with the Parisians, but insisted that it would be on his terms. The Parisians would have to allow his troops to come into the city walls and to pay their wages as well. Marcel and his colleagues were obliged to agree. So early on July the 11th, 1358, some of the English and Navarrese companies and assorted Norman and Picardy henchmen of the King of Navarre entered Paris and installed themselves in the royal palace on the Ile de la Cité. On the same day, Étienne Marcel made his last and most emotional appeal for support to the cities of the north. It included a comprehensive defense of everything that the Parisians had done, from the reforms of the Estates General to the murder of the marshals of Normandy and Champagne, and a bitter denunciation of the Dauphin, who preferred to raise armies for use against his own subjects than to defend the realm against the enemy. Parisians, Marcel said, were free men. They would rather die than be reduced to servitude. Well, beyond the bravado, there were already serious misgivings among some of Marcel's followers. The irony of condemning the Dauphin for failing to defend the realm while challenging him by force with a corps of English mercenaries must have struck many of them. The arrival of the English and the Navarrese within the walls turned out to be a serious mistake. This intensified the insecurity of the Parisians and the terror of sack and pillage, which they had in common with most medieval town dwellers. For although the men quartered in the palace behaved well enough, the ones in the suburb garrisons continued to kill, burn, and steal right up to the walls. Notwithstanding that now they were taking regular wages from municipal funds, and their compatriots were defending the city from within. While the Anglo-Navarrese companies blocked the routes to the capital from the north and the west, the Dauphin's men closed it off from the east. On July the 12th, 1358, they completed the construction of a bridge of boats across the Seine at Les Carrés, which enabled them to pass round by the south side of Paris as well. The encirclement of Paris was now almost complete. The critical point of the siege came on July the 14th, 1358, when the defenders made a determined attempt to destroy the bridge. They planned a triple sortie. One force would emerge from the Port Bordeaux, the university quarter south of the Seine, while another would issue from Port Saint-Antoine north of it. Both would consist mainly of English troops supported by armed citizens. A third force was to come out of the city by river on fortified barges. The three attacks, of course, were badly coordinated. The southern sortie and the barge party reached the Dauphin's bridge first, but the alarm was sounded before they could take possession of it. Although they inflicted heavy casualties on the Dauphin's troop and took some valuable prisoners, including the Dauphin's marshal, they were still driven off. The northern sortie started late and was repulsed with heavy losses, especially among the supporters of the citizens. For the first time, Marcel's partisans came to terms with the difficulty of their military situation. Some of them began to demand a resumption of negotiations with the Dauphin. They found enough support amongst the leader of the cities to force this point. During the next few days, the Parisians made contact with the Dauphin through Jean of Navarre. Another conference was arranged, called the Conference of the Bridge. It was held on July the 19th, 1358, in the middle of the Bridge of Boats at Les Carrés. The Dowager Queen presided, together with three papal commissioners. Charles of Navarre was there. The Dauphin came with a small group of unarmed advisors and no escort. The representatives of Paris came with a large and intimidating company of archers and men-at-arms, but none of the leaders of the revolution were among them. Their principal spokesman turned out to be Jean Bello. He was one of four échevins of the Hanse, but he had played little or no part in Marcel's revolution and was regarded by the Dauphin's advisors as a loyal servant of the crown. He and his colleagues were prepared to accept the terms which the Dauphin had offered on July the 8th, and eventually a modified version of them was agreed to by all parties. The only significant change was that instead of offering a general amnesty, the Dauphin required the Parisians to throw themselves on his mercy. However, he promised to take no steps against any of them except by the unanimous advice of four named individuals. They included Dowager Queen, the King of Navarre, and that, of course, was sufficient to guarantee the leaders of the revolution if the Dauphin's word could be trusted. The weakness of the agreement was that, as everyone appreciated, Parisians who were present only represented a party within the city. A period of persuasion would be necessary before their fellow citizens could be brought to agree. The whole arrangement, therefore, was made subject to confirmation 5 days later, on July the 24th, 1358. So we're going to have to give the Parisians a couple of days to think this over, and then we'll see what the Dauphin does. Now, the sources for this: The 100 Years' War by Nylans, The 100 Years' War by Perrois, and The 100 Years' War, Volume 2, Trial by Fire by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.